The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Already? Wow. Friday the 20th, another week has come and gone. Gone, speaking about gone, lots of things have gone. We have, of course, many people who are dying all over the world from the ongoing ramifications of the biological weapon deployment called the COVID-19 vaccines. And whichever one you got, they're all lousy. Some are far more deadly than others. We know that. We'll talk more about that in our next hour. First up tonight, Father Paul Kramer is back with us. We're very honored to have Father Kramer always. He is a fountain of knowledge and wisdom about the Vatican, about the world control mechanism, otherwise known as organized religion, and its connections with Davos. And Bergoglio, the fake pope now, is still there. Benedict the 16th is gone. He passed away, as most of you recall, from our last visit with Father Kramer 2 weeks ago. We covered the situation there. There have been developments since then. There's a lot of activity. One bishop, I believe, if I remember, it was a bishop, put out a note that he said that basically the Catholic Church has been overthrown, and what's going on there now is a fraud. Father Kramer, can you hear me all right? Are you there?
Yes, you're loud and clear. I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, yeah, you sound like you're right in the next room over, too. This is good. Okay, my friend, welcome back. Thank you for being here. What is the current status of the Vatican? How do we lock this into Davos, or do we, and the New World Order?
Well, unfortunately, Bergoglio is one of the gang as far as Davos is concerned. His public utterances make it clear that he's entirely on board with their agenda.
100%. I agree. Yeah, from everything I've read, he's one of them.
And what is most frightful is that the World Economic Forum is led by a group of psychopaths. They're not just power hungry. They are psychopaths.
I would say they might be even further defined as demonic, Luciferian, satanic psychopaths, if you will.
That's exactly what they are. But they are psychopaths. They a good example of a psychopath was like Adolf Hitler, who was a member of that what was called the Thule Gesellschaft. And that was entirely satanic and occult. And the founders of the Nazi Party were all into that kind of Luciferian type of demonism.
Right. And let me ask you a question relating to that. A statement that you made, how would that statement overlay Joseph Stalin? Another evil, inhumanly evil, satanic monster who killed apparently far more people than Germany did in World War II. Far, far more. We can go back to the Holodomor in the mid-30s in Ukraine, and we have, what, 35 million dead? We don't even know how many were starved to death by Stalin. So the point is, that period of history was being run by evil, demonic, satanic, Marxist, Luciferian psychopaths. And I will include in that, and it may not work for everyone out there, Churchill, Bomber Harris, Joseph Stalin, his predecessor. I'll even throw Eisenhower in there, who personally ordered the mass starvation deaths of well over 1 million servicemen who surrendered at the end of hostilities in Germany. Mass murder, a true Holocaust in Germany after the fighting had ceased. In other words, the planet seems to be crawling with these kinds of lunatic, insane killers. They're mass murderers. That's my take. I'm not speaking for Father Kramer, but please go ahead, Father Kramer.
You spoke very well, even for me, because I'll tell you, I talked about this back in 1973, the crime of Eisenhower. And people did not take very kindly to what I was saying, because they were still very much brainwashed. That was still the post-war era, and Eisenhower was still considered an American hero.
Right.
And people did not want to hear that, but some of the people I spoke to about that, eventually, they examined the evidence, and they eventually agreed with me that was correct.
Right.
And one other name...
Go ahead.
Let's not forget... Mao Zedong.
Oh, no, I was going to spin around the world to do that, but you please do. Yes, absolutely. We don't know how many for sure Mao liquidated, but it's at least 50 or 60 million. Yes.
Well, more than that, because he actually boasted about how many he killed. And he talked about some of the tyrants of many centuries ago. And uh-huh. how he boasted that he had killed so many more than they had. And Unreal. Stalin, I've forgotten mm-hmm. the name, I've forgotten the word, the Russian word. I 30 years ago, I could speak decent Russian, but I've lost my fluency in the language. Stalin had a nickname that he used, sort of a pen name. And connecting him with the demon, but I've forgotten the Russian word.
But, really? So he boasted about that too.
Yes, there was that demonic element, and he couldn't keep it within him. He had to let it be known that he was demonic.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's an interesting footnote that I didn't know about. Very interesting.
And I had a professor back in 1971. He had been a congressman after the war, and then again after he was teaching, he again became a congressman. His name was Percy Graves, and he was the head of the minority. In the minority investigation of the attack on Pearl Harbor, so the congressional investigation had the Democratic majority and the Republican minority, and he was the head of the Republican minority.
Right.
Even before Stevenson had published his books about how they broke the code of the Germans in World War II.
About
coded messages, and the coded messages were published. Graves had in his notebook, kept in his briefcase, he had copies of many of those coded messages already back in 1971, before these things were ever even published, because he had been part of the congressional investigation. And he made one very interesting observation, that when Hitler had made the pact with Stalin, the non-aggression pact, that was, I believe, was it 1937 or something like that? I can't remember.
Around there, yeah, yeah.
That earned much criticism for him. And to defend himself, he stated very bluntly that communism and National Socialism are essentially the same thing. And that was a speech he made, I think, to the regional governors, because he was being attacked for having made peace with Stalin, with the Soviet Union, with the communists. And that was his answer. Well, communism and National Socialism are essentially the same thing.
That's a real that's a shocker to me. I don't really see the parallels at all. You can use the word socialism, I guess, on both techniques of dominating and controlling the masses, but I don't think Nazi Germany was communist by any stretch in the traditional sense of that definition, but that's just me. Well, I don't know what you have, but go ahead. Well, this is interesting.
There are what I call the accidental differences between the Soviet system and the Nazi system. But the German National Socialism was something that was custom tailored for Germany at that period of time. But it is an ideology that is much wider, much broader, and it still exists today, as we all know.
Yeah.
And it has been shorn of that Germanism, and it's morphed into something much more dangerous now.
Far more, yes, far more. This is interesting. I don't know where ultimately you can put Joseph Stalin, except in a cage by himself or a class by himself, whatever. This guy was just a ruthless butcher. Look at Germany after the Weimar years, and look how it came back to life. Look what happened in Germany under the National Socialism principles they had. That country came back so strongly, so phenomenally in the 1930s, that Adolf Hitler was on the cover of Time magazine, I believe, four times altogether, three times, and once as Man of the Year. The German economic miracle and the cleaning up of the debauchery that the Bolsheviks and the elements therein tried to sow throughout Germany in the late 20s and 30s, early 30s, the cleansing of that from Germany was a miraculous achievement, unlike anything we've ever seen. Of course, no one hears about it anymore. But right or wrong, those are facts. And the German people absolutely supported everything about their government. They loved their country and they loved their government because they had been brought back from the cesspool of living that post-World War I Germany was forced into. And it was an extraordinary story that no one knows about now. Please go ahead.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to mention that he was on the cover of Time magazine and he had been named Man of the Year.
Yeah. You can't say the same about the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was a rat hole compared to Germany. And that's a fact. And there was no visionary in or without the Soviet government that had anything like the German people were expecting and were certainly given by their government. The Soviet system was horrific, as most people know now. The Bolsheviks were killers, mass murdering people to suit their whim and fancy. Just incredible. That's an epoch in our history that, Father Kramer, our younger people will never understand because they don't have a yen or a thirst for knowledge. And where are they going to find it? They're not going to find it in their government school system or these paid and bought university curricula that they sign up for and attend. Anyhow, I'm rambling here, but go ahead, please.
You just touched upon something that is very disturbing, is that my generation, we grew up in an era when, even though it didn't really exist, nevertheless, there was some semblance of freedom of speech. There was some semblance of freedom propagating information and sharing information.
Yeah, free press, if you will. Sure.
And everyone had the right to express his opinion without being penalized. It was even a man that I don't admire at all, Voltaire. One thing he said though is it should be recalled because it's worth mentioning. He mentioned someone on the opposite end of the political spectrum in one of his writings, and he said, I vehemently disagree with him, but I would give my life to defend his right to express his opinion. Now,
well, yeah, points for that. Okay.
Now, it is decreed from on high what we may say and what we may not say. And we have to bear in mind who is making these decisions. It would be bad enough if our elected leaders had that power legally, right, to dictate what we may say, what we may think, and what we may not say, what we may not think. But it's not even our elected leaders, because what do our elected leaders say? They simply say, we do what we're told. It is the nameless, faceless, super rich who hide behind the shield of anonymity. And these are the ones who dictate what we may say, what we may think, what we may do. And it increasingly is getting to the point that since they want to, they are gradually, and now at a galloping rate, they are implementing the social credit system of Red China on the Western world.
Correct.
And it's getting to the point that you will have no appeal. They will dictate what is the truth. And they have a different definition of truth than anything to do with reality. They through propaganda, they have created a parallel universe, which is the inversion of reality.
Nicely said. It is. Perfect inversion.
And if you don't express those ideas, if you don't toe the line, then there's no appeal. You're going to have your bank account shut off. And some people are already having their bank account shut off. It's already happened to a number of individuals. I won't mention the names on the air, but I know a particular individual, one very recently, who simply this is in the UK. He had his bank account switched off, and no access to his funds.
Hmm. So it's happening over here now. China was basically a beta test for all this. The ants are more easily dominated there. They're not so used to having a so-called two-party system. They have a one-party system. It's communism. That's what it is, CCP. So we have here now people in the UK, at least one that you know of personally, who has had his funding shut off because of his efforts to express himself freely and openly, I assume. That's why.
That's correct. That is correct. They will create, at the moment, they will create some kind of plausible deniability, and they'll give some very
lame excuse. Yeah, I know.
Some very lame excuse for doing it, but it's like what Stalin did in the Soviet Union when there was a man who was it's all described, by the way, in Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago in the first volume, where there was a man who was a manager of a factory, and they had a meeting with all the factory employees, and the management were together in an auditorium, and at the name of Stalin, the head of the factory started clapping. And that was a fatal mistake, because everybody's clapping, and a minute passes, 5 minutes passes, everybody's still clapping. 10 minutes pass, everyone is still clapping. 15 minutes pass, people are fainting, people are dropping to the ground. And after about 20 minutes, the factory director decided that he's the one who started this madness, he'd better put an end to it. So he stopped clapping. Everybody immediately stopped. Within days, he was arrested. And he was convicted of an offense that had nothing to do with anything that took place on the day in that auditorium. And he was sent to the Gulag. And when the judge gave him a 10-year sentence in the forced labor, after he pronounced the sentence for whatever infraction he supposedly had committed, the judge then turned to the defendant and said, "And don't you ever again be the first one to stop clapping."
Oh, God. That's something else. I've not heard that story before. Well, that's a perfect example of Bolshevik communist insanity. It's mad. Crazy. That's crazy.
But now, today, in the USA and in Western Europe, if you dare to contradict the party line, you don't get shipped to forced labor, but you get canceled.
Correct.
And there's going to be the Gulag coming soon. We're going to be suffering the same fate that happened under Stalin. It's just a question of the timetable. We haven't reached that point in the timetable where we're going to be shipped into the equivalent of Siberia just yet. But it's on the way. But this is where we are at now. And they have completely inverted the values, whereas once upon a time, and for a long time, freedom of speech was something that was treasured, and it was something that was taught in the public schools.
It was sacred, for goodness sakes.
That's right.
Absolutely.
It was sacred, yes. It was our birthright. But now, if you dare say anything that contradicts the dictates from on high, there is no rationality. There is no rationality. You may not question what is being dictated. You simply get canceled. You simply get penalized. You might lose your job now. People are losing their jobs simply for speaking their what they believe to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, philosophically, was it taken? Were our birthrights taken from us, free speech being certainly as rudimentary as you can get, or did we allow them to be taken from us? I don't know which. I suspect it's a combination of both. When you look at the school system and study it over the last 50 to 100 years, you can see how it went completely communist compared to what it was. The American high school graduate in 1949 or something like that, was smarter, measurably, demonstrably smarter than any normal Bachelor of Science or Bachelor of Arts college graduate of today. Far smarter, far better educated, far more intelligent, far more proactive in their approach toward life and thinking. Now, they're just walking, drooling zombies, staring at their phones or the other screen in their home, whatever. They're screen-oriented. They're completely subservient to their peers and their peer pressure, whatever that may be. And I'm not talking about all of them, because there's some young people right now listening to this program who are extraordinary people, wonderful people, brilliant young people, but they're not in the majority by any measure. And a lot of them have told me over the years that they literally don't talk around their friends, or they won't have any, quote, friends, unquote, left. They'll be dumped. So they're afraid.
Yes. That's right.
They're afraid to be intelligent. And some of them actually score lower on their exams in school, high school especially, than they otherwise would, not to be pointed out as being some kind of a smart ass or a show-off. So they play dumb so they can maintain their friends. There have been articles written on this. It's very interesting. That's how much pressure is on young people now. And where is that pressure taking them? Down and down and down. Go ahead.
Yes, I know. I've had rather close relatives who are considerably younger than myself who have undergone that kind of experience. A high-level honor student is disliked for having high achievement academically. I remember about at least 25 years ago, I was talking to a gentleman older than myself, and I was mentioning that how my brother was, at the time, he was a professor of biochemistry at a certain college or university. I can't remember which. It's a university now. He was a college at the time.
Right.
Same thing. It's the same institution. And he was mentioning how in the exams, the students did not even know how to define what is a carbohydrate.
Huh.
And
okay.
And so I was mentioning, I was saying that these are university students in the biology faculty, and in a course in biochemistry, they are asked in their exam to give what is the definition, the chemical definition of a carbohydrate, and they don't know it.
Mm-mm.
And they complain that they thought their answer was adequate, when of course it was dismally inadequate, because they were not able to define in terms of chemistry what is a carbohydrate. And the older gentleman told me, before I could even get onto to something more precise, he defined exactly what is the chemical definition of a carbohydrate. And he told me, we learned that in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his high school years were in the late 1940s.
There you go. That's it.
So they taught that to the students in the 1940s. Now the college students were complaining about being asked in the exam and they didn't know the answer. And this is not now. This is now. This is like 25 years ago.
I hear you. Yeah, it's so bad now. It is said, Father Kramer, that America, the American public, younger people, have lost 7 points IQ for each generation since World War II. Let's call it two generations. If that's true, that's 14 points. That's a lot. If you start out with a 95 to 100 IQ, which is above normal a little, and you whack 14 points off that, that would go a long way toward explaining what we see walking around and talking nowadays in terms of our younger people. They just don't have it. They don't live in the same reality we do. They didn't experience the reality we did of 30, 35, 40 years ago, so they don't understand what they've lost. What they see now and what they're experiencing to them is 100% normal. That's fine with them. And then you have a lack of interest in actually getting out there and changing your environment to make your life better. They expect to be taken care of by the state. They've bought into this greatest lie, this malignant lie, this malevolent lie of socialism. The state owes me universal income, et cetera, et cetera. And then you mix all that in with this other crap coming from the WEF and Davos and others, that you're going to own nothing in the next generation, and you're going to be extremely happy about it. You won't have a house, you won't own a car, you won't own anything. You'll live in a little rat hole cubicle, a hamster cage. They call it tiny houses, and you'll be elated. That's what they're telling people is coming. And I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to install it. I think they are. That's where they're headed.
Yes, and I'm trying to think of the name of the author of Brave New World. What was his name?
Aldous Huxley.
Aldous Huxley, yes. I think in 1972, he gave a speech. And he mentioned that they would even use chemical drugs, to mind-altering drugs, to make people be happy about this kind of a situation. Something that should be something that should be they should be appalled about. Yet they will be happy because of the drugs that they'll be given. And
I know they're legalizing psychedelic drugs. Yeah, they have in Oregon already. They're moving toward it in California and I think Washington. Anyway, they're moving toward it with all these left-wing communist. They're communist states in this country is what they are. Democrats now basically are communists in many, many cases. Sad, but true.
Well, the Democratic Party is the communist party, the real communist party.
That's right.
In the United States, unfortunately. And the way that things are changed, the way social change is brought about, it reminds me very much of the logo of the Fabian socialist, which is the tortoise, because it's a gradual. It is communism that is incrementally built. It's developed incrementally, slowly, gradually, but it gets to the same goal. It arrives at the same termination point, which is what Stalin had in the Soviet Union. That's eventually what it will lead to. And
I agree.
They are experts in psychology and behavioral science. And unfortunately, they know how to play on what is in psychology is called the normalcy bias. Now, if I can explain it this way, what is the normalcy bias? We just had this so-called pandemic. Anthony Fauci, back in 2016, appeared. I can't remember in what place, but the video is out there. 2016, when he said, "This is at the tail end of the Obama administration." He said, "During the next administration, there's going to be public health challenges." And he names the usual things, and he said, "But there is going to be a surprise outbreak." Well, I mean, how did he know? How did he know? On October of 2019, just almost to the day when the outbreak began, he said the outbreak is imminent.
It's all planned, Father Kramer. You know this very, very well, and most of our listeners do at this point in their lives, and the last 2 years have been just the exposition of planning that went back 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years, who knows? It's all planned, everything by the plan.
One year before that, 2018, his representatives and the Gates Foundation and Johns Hopkins, all the same familiar faces, all gathered in May of 2018 in Berlin, and they even put a name on this hypothetical outbreak that's going to happen, and they called it mountain-associated respiratory syndrome. And the outbreak would take place in a remote mountainous region, a landlocked remote mountainous region, which of course describes perfectly the place where the outbreak took place, Hubei province in China. So now you had this outbreak, which was engineered. It was planned, it was engineered, and took place. But now it seems to be passed, and people are getting on with their lives again, and as if we're back to normal. Now, it reminds me of something it shows me just how expert they are in behavioral science.
Masters of it. Absolutely. You're on it. That's it.
That's 1972. Mm-hmm. I went to Rome to study philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living in a place outside of the city, on the outskirts of Rome. And they had chickens on the property. So they always had fresh chicken meat because they had live chickens out there. And when they're going to roast chickens, there was a retired priest who had a net like with a long handle. And when he's walking toward the chickens, they're walking away from him, and he's slowly coming up on them, don't want to alarm them. And when he gets close enough, down comes that net, and he takes pulls the chicken in, twists the neck, and kills it. And all the chickens are all in a panic. But they all run away, and then he just slowly walks and catches up to them, and it's like back to normal again, and it repeats that process over and over again. And I was 20 years old at the time, and I said to myself, how could these animals be so stupid that here they're being killed one by one, and everything's back to normal, and they don't realize it's going to happen to them again. And I was thinking, how could these chickens be so stupid? And now I look back to myself 50 years ago and I say, how could I have been so stupid to not understand that people are just as stupid as those chickens?
Unfortunately, you're more than correct, and I see no way to remedy this astonishing deficit in what used to be advanced cultural behavior and intelligence. It's just gone now. It's been taken down to its rudiments. Morality is gone. Families are gone. It's gone. It's the deconstruction of white Western Christian civilization is what's going on now. Without going too much into that further, where is the Vatican now? What has come out of the Vatican in the last 2 weeks since we last talked after the death of Benedict XVI? What is new? Bergoglio was challenged by someone who wrote a story. I think I sent it to you. And it was, a bishop, and he said that the Vatican now, I think he said it has been overthrown or something similar to that. It's a fake regime. And where are we with that?
That was Archbishop Carlo Maria Viganò.
Yeah.
And yes, he referred to the sect that occupies the Vatican, the words that he actually used in these. He's come out more recently again with another statement, which I was going to listen to that today, but I didn't have the opportunity. I had a very busy day today. I didn't have a chance to listen to it, but probably as soon as this program's over, I'm going to listen to what he had to say because he's very informative. And yes, he said it was a sect that occupies the Vatican. And they are carefully using that kind of gradualism. And there are people in the Vatican who will actually use that term gradualism. They've been using it for a long time. Like the deep state. Unfortunately, in the Catholic Church, we have a deep church, and Archbishop Viganò makes mention of that too, and it's entirely correct. And it's all the same people. It's called ecclesiastical masonry, and it's well known that they are the ones in control. I had a personal friend of mine from 1974, when I first met him, until 2009, when he died, Monsignor Mario Marini, who at the time of his death was the secretary of the Sacred Congregation of what they used to call the Sacred Congregation of Rites. I think they changed it. to the discipline of the sacraments, to the liturgy and discipline of the sacraments. Okay. Just like in the Soviet Union, they had to change the name of the bureaus. And so what was once the Sacred Congregation of Rites has now been has had the name changed several times. But he was the secretary of that Roman dicastery, and he told me back in 1996 when he was, I think, still in the Congregation for the Clergy. And he told me, our hands are tied. We can do nothing because all of the key positions are occupied by Masons. And shortly before he died, in October of 2008, I was at his house again. I had a meeting with him. And he said, we are under Masonic occupation. And this is
we have been for a long time. This goes way back, but now more blatant perhaps than ever before. And it's there. All of this data is there now. It's readily available to people who want to do the research, want to do the thinking. Yes, we are under Masonic globalist. We can see it manifesting many different ways, most prominently now by Herr Schwab and Harari, his number one, and the WEF. They're the most prominent and obvious control mechanism that I think we can put our fingers on right now. But yes, above that is the Masonic power structure. It's a matrix at the top.
Now, they've achieved something that back in the 1820s, they thought was impossible. They thought it would never happen, but it has happened. That they have their man in the Vatican sitting on the papal throne, and they thought this could never happen. That they could never get that high of a position. But Pope Benedict himself pointed out that in an interview with Peter Zewald, it's in Zewald's biography of Benedict XVI, where Benedict was speaking about his renunciation of the active ministry, that his adopting the retired life of what he called the Pope Emeritus. Not
right.
He did not really resign the office. He simply renounced the activities of administrating the papal office, which he did not relinquish. Now, what he said about that was, I think, trying to justify why he stepped back and went into retirement. And he talked about the pressures that were being applied to him. Mm-hmm. He said that they were such that he would have died. He said, "I would have died, and my pontificate would have ended anyways." And he spoke about specifically these pressures being exerted by these forces, which he termed Antichrist. Hmm. Now that is ecclesiastical masonry. They are the ones in charge now, and now they have their man at the top.
Absolutely. Their number one marionette is right there, Bergoglio. The guy honestly gives me the creeps, not to be too pedestrian about this, but he has no dignity. He has no strength of character. He seems to be nothing more than a figurehead. I think it's maybe the worst pope I've seen. And I don't follow the Catholic Church, to be honest. I don't have time, but he is a very a dark character, this man.
Well, Melanie Martin put it best when he spoke about the organization of the Catholic Church. Now, this is something to be distinguished from the Church itself. Mm-hmm. The Church itself is defined, and it's St. Robert Bellarmine, one of the two greatest doctors after the Council of Trent. St. Robert Bellarmine made an exposition explaining what is the definition of the Church, and of course, it is each diocese, the bishop with the clergy and the lay people, that the faithful Catholics under his governance, and it's the bishops themselves under the governance of the Pope. Now, that is the Church. It is something that is to be distinguished from the administrative apparatus of the Church, the organization. And this is what Malachi Martin said, that the organ is, and he tied this into, this is exactly what is in the third secret of Fatima. The organization of the Catholic Church will be completely taken over. And he referred to that as the collapse at the center. Of course, the very center of Catholicism is the Vatican. And he said there will take place the collapse at the center. That is when the organization of the Catholic Church at the very highest level of command will be taken over by the opposition, by the adversaries. That is that collapse of the center, and that is when the organization of the Catholic Church will be completely taken over. And with the ousting of Benedict and with the installation of Bergoglio, who is their man, he is the face of ecclesiastical Freemasonry.
Okay.
You have had, to use the title of one of Malachi's books, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Church. Well, we have seen the decline and fall of the organization of the Roman Church. The collapse has taken place. It has fully taken place. It needs only now to be consummated in a manner that will be far more visible, if that's imaginable. For those who have eyes to see, it's very visible. It's happened. But Bergoglio's Vatican, and this is what Catholics must understand, Bergoglio's Vatican is not the Catholic Church. St. Robert Bellarmine was the one who explained it best. And he said that the Church, what is the true Church? Meaning, what is the true Catholic Church? He explains, it is that Church that professes the faith of Christ. The faith that Christ preached and taught, that is the Church, not the Vatican, because the Vatican now preaches and teaches a different religion, something that is opposed to Jesus Christ, something that is opposed to what the Church has represented for 2,000 years. It has now been inverted, but inverted so cleverly and so gradually that that people don't seem to understand that the revolution has been consummated. And what is now at the command position in Rome is what Bergoglio himself said. What did Bergoglio say when he opened up this synod, which will end sometime next year, the Synod on Synodality, where the Church under the papacy, under the absolute jurisdiction of the papacy, is going to be changed to a church that is where the seat of power will be in the national hierarchies, in the synods. And that's why he's always talking about the synodal church, the church that will be where the power is located with the synod. And he said, these are his own words. He said, it will be a different church. A different church.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea. They've overthrown it and they're reformatting it. You know, you mentioned Aldous Huxley earlier. If you look on YouTube and look up Aldous Huxley, you can find an interview, and I played this on the site and on the program, pieces of it, interviewed by Mike Wallace, 1958. And just for fun, let's listen to a minute or two so all of you out there can get an idea of the level of intellect that used to be commonly available on TV. You won't see or hear anything like this anymore. Here's Mike Wallace and just a little bit of Aldous Huxley.
You write about television commercials, not just political commercials, but television commercials as such. And how, as you put it, today's children walk around singing beer commercials and toothpaste commercials. And then you link this phenomenon in some way with the dangers of a dictatorship. Now, could you spell out the connection, or how do you feel that you have done so sufficiently?
Well, I mean, here, Kate, this whole question of children, I think, is a terribly important one, because children are quite clearly much more suggestible than the average grown-up. And again, suppose that that for one reason or another all the propaganda was in the hands of one or very few agencies, you would have an extraordinarily powerful force playing on these children, who after all are going to grow up and be adults quite soon. I do think that this is not an immediate threat, but it remains a possible threat. And
you said something to the effect in your essay that the children...
Okay, just to give you an idea, you younger people especially, this is the kind of intellect that used to be available on television. You'd see intelligent people, brilliant people often, talking about things that were not yet on the table. But as you heard him say, I don't think this is necessarily at hand now, but one day it will be. And boy, was he right. He saw it. Huxley was truly a visionary in a geopolitical, social, and nation-state sense. He was brilliant.
Yes, but he was on the wrong side.
Oh, I know. But even the interesting part of this is that people on both sides were still talking about it then. They knew what was coming. He knew what was coming. Just like Orwell knew what was coming. These people were part of the machine. And anyway, it's fascinating to hear. What do you see on television now? America's Got Talent? Britain's Got Talent? I don't know. I don't watch it. But what you put into the minds of the masses, you get out by way of their performance and their conformity. They're not going to stand up individually like they used to. It's just not in people anymore. It's been taken out of them.
People watch the network news, and these are the sheep being fed their feed.
100% right. Yeah.
George Bush was asked if he watches the news. This is the elder Bush, Bush Senior. He was asked, "Do you watch the TV network news broadcasts?" And he said, "No, I don't." They said, "Well, why not?" Because I already know before it happens.
He wasn't exaggerating. He knew. He was a player. All his life, he was a player. I don't, you know, his pronouncements like that are all on the record. CIA, director of the CIA, he knew. It's all planned. That's what people cannot understand. They still believe in coincidences and happenstance and all that. They think that they actually have a vote and that there really is a two-party system. No. Unfortunately not. And you've seen the government of the UK. That is beyond a sham of a joke. And ours is quite similar. Different labels, different players, of course. But it's no longer representative or even pretending to represent the will of the majority of the people. It doesn't.
It is a hired management agency, and it is the people who finance the system, who control it.
Right.
And they represent their bosses who are not the people who elected them, but their real bosses are right. the ones upon whom their careers depend.
Hey, we can take that one step further. We're out of time, actually. Everyone's got a price, Father Kramer. And that statement, I think, has never been more applicable than it is now. Everyone seems to have a price. Not everyone, but virtually everyone. And if you're a player and you're publicly visible, or if you're in a position of power or authority, you have sold out, or you wouldn't be there. They, the controllers, will not allow it. And they are ruthless about enforcing that. We've lost a lot of good people.
This is the great evil of our time. And it was in... The Secret of Lipa, Philippines, October 17th, 1949, the Virgin Mary entrusted the secret to a young novice by the name of Teresita Castillo. And one of the things she said in the secret was that money will be the instrument to corrupt the entire world. And hasn't that taken place?
Oh, indeed. Indeed it has. Father Kramer, we're running late. Thank you very much for getting up. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you next time. Keep
okay,
at it.
Okay, we'll see you again. God willing.
Okay, good night. Father Paul Kramer, and always good to speak with that man. We will be right back with much more, so stay there.